And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com and, of course, using the fabulous radio network FreedomSlips.com. Not to mention, I think in the last month or so, I think we've picked up four new online and AM, FM affiliates, and you can go to the homepage, thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, and just scroll down just a little bit, and on the right side of the page, there's an affiliate slider, and you can roll through that and find out what the schedules are and things like that, because, you know, sometimes you want to listen to it live, and sometimes when it's a rebroadcast, you can't tell the difference, and you just love that Shiite Muslim. Right, now back to our very special guests, Dane Wigginton and Sylvain Henry. Now, Dane, you were in the middle of explaining about a congressman and a dam and a something-something.
I will. In fact, I'll go into that. And I forgot to mention, Vincent, for those listeners who don't know, my website is geoengineeringwatch.org. So if they want more information on the subject, no politics, no advertising, just geoengineering. So on this congressman, at one meeting where he tried to duck the issue, he stated if I could serve him something to go on, he would look into this issue. The following week, I had data from a contact I have at California EPA stating conclusively that there is aluminum flowing through the rivers in Northern California. Had a number of tests in this particular data file. Served that up to the congressman at a second meeting a week later. He looked like a deer in the headlights. Him and his staff later took the position that they don't recognize these tests from California EPA as being valid. So now, as of our meeting last week, we just had in Northern California, I just found out that one of this congressman's staffers was at the meeting, at the exit door, unknown to me, telling people Dane is lying on the way out, an aide to a congressman. Now, I've just confronted her publicly today that tell me exactly where I'm lying. So this is the kind of government we have. Back to what Sylvain said, I completely agree with Sylvain. Also completely agree with Sylvain that if we lose internet, we have not much chance of getting anything off the ground. So the fight he's engaged in matters. It completely matters. All I would argue is this, that we are past the point of unemployment, raising GDP. All that was a snake eating its own tail, and that era is over. We are now in a fight for life, quite literally. They can't hide that much longer. And the former game is over again, and people, if they understand somewhere in the back of their mind, as the facade shatters, and it's shattering by the day, that they will die if this spraying continues, that we are all breathing this. In fact, to put a little bit of legs to this, the latest statistics we got from MIT, and most people know who MIT is, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, it's one of the most renowned research centers on the globe, on the current trajectory, within 10 years, one out of two children will have autism. Society's over at that point. And that doesn't mean the child that's not diagnosed is healthy. It's not. None of us are healthy. Every single human test subject that's tested for these heavy metals, whether it's hair, urine, or blood, we are all packed with these metals. Our bodies are beginning to break down. It's not going to continue much longer. Biosphere's breaking down. Ocean's breaking down. The current paradigm must end, or we have no chance. So I know that's not a message people want, but quite simply, it's the truth. And the example I use on that, Vincent, if you're standing in the interstate, you're a lot better off facing traffic. So
yeah. So it's kind of like that scene from Network, and you're like, go stick your head out the window, go stick your head out and shout, I'm being engineered, and I'm not going to take it anymore.
That's where we're at.
Yeah. Look, human experimentation without people's consent, there's no freaking way of justifying it, is there? You know? No moral justification. Not to my mind. I have little doubt that whoever is behind all of this, and here's the thing. I interviewed an assassin, all right, former assassin, and he was asked, you know, how exactly would you like solve the Israel-Palestine issue or something like that, using your skill set, if this was back in the day and you had your funding and everything. And he says, well, you wouldn't go after the Israeli Prime Minister or anything. They got a lot of defenses, okay? You go after their families. You go to their homes. Sooner or later, very, very soon, they'll get the message that they can't protect what's theirs anymore, and they'll abandon their campaign. And I thought, what if you could actually do that in a political way? What if the reason why our politicians don't listen to us is because we're not camped outside their homes? They can get away from us. They've got houses in the Hamptons, you know? What if people were camped outside there too? What if Occupy Wall Street didn't actually occupy Wall Street, which is a public place where people only go to during the day and then go home to their nice, unspoiled refuges that they've bought with their millions of dollars? What if it was right there? What if it was inescapable? What if it was in your face every day? Every time you walk to your window in your underpants, you have people jeering at you about the size of your manhood. You know? This would actually catalyze change. You have to actually take these people where they live. You have to make it uncomfortable for them. Because if they can get away from it, then they're experiencing a modicum of refuge that none of us really have anymore. We're all breathing the same chemicals, are we not? We're all infected with the same crap, are we not? We're all dealing with the same problems. And it's only when those problems come home to roost, in a literal fashion, that I believe that we'll see significant traction on these issues. Now, speaking of which, you have Occupy as a movement, okay? It was actually quite big before the media even started reporting on it. And in New Zealand here, we even got the approval of the Auckland Central Police Commander to sit there in Aotea Square in the central Auckland and protest, because we're entitled to under the Bill of Rights. And guess what? He went on holiday. And then the deputy commander stepped in and says, we're going to remove these people. And they used cops from the other side of the city rather than the central cops, who knew the central commander. Isn't that interesting? Because you're not dealing with people who play by rules, are you? And there's a whole lot of moral rules that hold us back. Like, we don't want to hurt their families. We don't want to, like, cause them discomfort or anything like that. Oh, we don't want to be like our enemy. Well, the problem is these people are in our homes, you know, figuratively speaking. They're broadcasting through us through the television and all forms of media. Why couldn't we actually take this not to the streets, but to the homes of people who are directly responsible? Targeted attacks. Now, Penny Bright, who's an activist who I just was interviewing before I came here, she exposed this massive rates dispute, okay, in Auckland City Council. Millions upon millions. I think several hundred million dollars missing in unaccounted for contracting licensing. You know, that kind of thing. And so she decides she's not going to pay her rates. They come to take her house, the very first house ever that was freehold. And what's interesting is that the mayor, or rather the head of the council-controlled organizations who purvey all this contracting, said that Penny Bright was being outlandish and making wild and inaccurate statements. So what she did is privately prosecuted him for defamation. She says, okay, that's a completely defamatory statement. You can either put up the evidence or I'm going to take you to court. And it's going to be 10 grand in order for me to go away in the first place. And you have by X date to reply. If he doesn't reply by 5 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, she's going to take him to the High Court. And High Court settlements range into the hundreds of thousands of dollars. See, that's the thing that I'm talking about. You can have a corrupt official right there, but it's not the width of the stand or the amount of people that you have with you. It's the depth of the stand. It's the bite that does not let go in a bull terrier type fashion that will truly rend the flesh from the zombies that are eating our brains.
Well said.
On that note, Vincent, and I'll let Sylvain continue then, but since you're on that subject, we are scheduled now, as I mentioned, first order of business was to raise awareness enough to have a small army, at least, to join this issue. Because without that, you will get nowhere in any arena. But now we have that in Northern California. So a week from this Friday, on December 5th, we are doing a sit-in at the North State TV News, KRCR News, whose chief meteorologist is telling the news program that they cannot talk about this issue. So even though prominent members of the community from all arenas are trying to discuss this issue, are trying to bring this up, they refuse to even address them. So now we're going to that station with hopefully several hundred people. We've already had signs made, professionally done signs, 4-foot by 8-foot signs. And we are going to give notice and professionally film this, that that chief meteorologist by name, Mike Krueger, is lying to the public to protect his paycheck. And we will name him by name, and hopefully this will send notice to all the meteorologists, all the newsrooms, that the public knows they are lying to us about something that's making our children sick, making us sick. We know they know, and we're not okay with it. And so we're trying to set an example out of one particular chief meteorologist and his news crew, and we'll put that on YouTube. We'll have it professionally filmed and have it up after to start setting notice. And we are also in the disinformation directory to follow up on the theme that you're discussing, Vincent, exposing individuals, putting their business emails there for the whole world to see, stating what their position is. They're lying, which makes them an accomplice, which means if we can get this exposed, and this affects everybody, even the police that you and Sylvia have both named and the way they behave, once they also realize that they, in fact, are being poisoned along with the rest of us, if we have one chance, if there's one issue that could be so catalyzing, so boundary crossing of anything else that can't be hidden, it's right there in front of us every day, it's affecting our health. If there was one issue that could still unite global populations in a common cause to stand against the collective insanity that's brought us here, I would argue climate engineering is it.
Now, we have what was his name, Sheriff Richard Mack, and I was thinking about in terms of law enforcement. You can publicly elect sheriffs in the United States still. You can't do this with almost any other police force that I've ever heard of in the world. But what this means is that if your sheriff isn't upholding the laws that the community wants or arresting the people it wants arrested, you can vote them out. What if there was an integration with the sheriff's departments and sheriff's offices on the part of geoengineering or the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, for example, that these departments will simply say, no, we're not going to protect these conferences, you know, minister comes in or whatever, and they're like, hey, we need police lines over there to keep these dastardly protesters away from us, you know, because they've got signs and language and things, and it's just terrifying to us. And you go, no, you're on your own. You'll have to hire private security, and if the private security hurt any of the protesters, I'll arrest them and you. See, that's what happens when you got the monopoly of force on your side, is you could just be nasty to people, but imagine if they were actually nasty to people who were nasty first, you know? Wouldn't that be a new paradigm in American policing?
Mm-hmm. By the way, at a get-together, I recommend, if at all possible, you find out who your enemy is that you're facing, find out if he has a family, children, older teenagers, preferably people who are, you know, who can think critically and who are, you know, the size of an adult, and invite them to your protest so that they're visible on the front line. So if you're dealing with a police department or with a municipality, they'll look out and they'll say, oh, your nephew, your niece is there, your daughter is there, your wife is there in the protest. You know, it makes it more difficult for them to just laugh at the crowd when their own family members are on the side of the crowd. So I found that to be a useful strategy.
I think that's a great idea, Sylvain. I think that's an absolutely great idea. And this is the way to peacefully undermine the foundation. It's the only way forward. And we had to actually, last Friday, we had one of the county supervisors on our board of experts, on our panel of experts, breaking ranks with all his peers. So that's a step in that direction. But I certainly agree with that tack, Sylvain, and we need to get to that point fast. And there are people now in the youth that understand. We have colleges here now that understand what's happening above them, that understand if it continues, they'll have nothing left to salvage. They're joining our ranks, so hopefully there are some family members of people in positions of power that will join us on this front line, even in a week, even December 5th.
We're talking about social structure of society actually being used in order to change it, right, as opposed to maintain what it is already. You know, that's a new benchmark, isn't it?
It would be. Yeah. It would be. And the changes are happening so radically fast right now that people will not have the option of keeping their head in the sand much longer. Their heads will be pulled out of the sand. Their bubble will be shattered.
I fear that you're flogging a dead horse here and repeating yourself. What I'd like to hear is the details, specifically, what's actually going down. I mean, you talked of methane releases. What else are we talking about? What phenomena can we see right here, right now, that we've got evidence to prove exists?
The latest visible observations of methane hydrate in the Arctic. There were observations of methane plumes 150 kilometers wide. I mean, that's a virtual geyser into the sky. Now, for methane, and methane is much more potent than CO2, and again, this is the sort of division that's happened with the community, and that people are now convincing themselves that we can all drive motorhomes forever if we just stop climate engineering, and that's not reality. We put 100 million tons of CO2 in the atmosphere a day. That's a problem, a huge problem. Climate engineering is an even bigger problem. So on the methane, you'll hear the science community, Vincent, talk about methane as being 20 times more potent than CO2 as a greenhouse gas. That's over a 100-year time horizon. We don't have anywhere near that long. Over a 30 to 60-day time horizon, methane can be as much as 1,000 times more potent. It is the game changer. It's happening now. It's flooding the atmosphere. We're seeing noctilucent clouds at latitudes we should not see them. I think Project Alamo and Project Lucy are fully deployed. Those are acronyms for programs to use the ionosphere heaters, the HARP installations, if people don't know what that is, massively powerful ground-based radio frequency transmitters that are microwaving the atmosphere right now, some installations as much as 3.5 billion watts, with opposing frequencies to try to degrade some of that methane. What happens then? What are the consequences? Nobody knows. But we do know we're seeing warnings all over the globe from the ozone depletion, even though we had the articles I mentioned earlier that said it was getting better, which is a complete lie. We're metering ozone, or metering UV, rather, on the surface right now. We're getting UVB readings as much as 1,000% higher. That's 10 times higher than we're being told. No ozone layer, no life on Earth. Now let's add the methane. Right now, mathematically, this is where it equates to. And we have about 80 frontline methane scientists that would back these figures. We're looking at a planet that has no life by 2040. Northern Hemisphere, about 10 years ahead of that. That's not very long. And that doesn't mean we sit around watching football games till that point. So, again, methane will turn this planet into Venus if it continues, if the current paradigm continues, if the current climate engineering continues. We will hit the wall very soon, no matter what. And at best, even if we apply full brakes right now, a collapse of a magnitude that few can comprehend, I would argue, mathematically. I'm speaking mathematically. I'm not looking into some crystal ball. I'm looking at facts and figures. It's happening already.
Now, I was also wanting to remark upon clouds. Now, what happens is when you got clouds, they reflect sunlight. Not as much heat gets through. And what happens when you've got more heat in the atmosphere is more water vapor gets produced and more clouds, and then it winds up cooling it down again. So in some ways, that's not quite the issue. The issue here is the thousands upon thousands of chemical contaminants that we've got in our water, food, and air supply already, because that would probably kill a lot more people a lot faster, and maybe even before we see major climate collapse, we'd all be dead anyway.
Well, on this track, it's coming from every angle. And again, the planet can't produce the hydrological cycle that it would with an atmosphere full of particulates. It can't happen. So we don't know how beneficial the planet's natural response might be, because it's not being allowed to happen. We have the western U.S. turning into a droughted-out dust bowl. When we have former eras, like the Pliocene epoch, 5.2 million years ago, we had carbon counts that were 25% higher than today, and that transitional period happened at a much slower pace than today. But even with carbon counts 25% higher, we had a very lush western U.S. not a drought out dust bowl. The only reason for the disruption of the hydrological cycle here is climate engineering, the ionosphere heaters, manipulating wind currents, and the particulates in the atmosphere. So the forests, instead of becoming a carbon sink and absorbing carbon, now they're carbon sources because they're virtually dying. Now, the problem is with that, with modern civilization, is, again, we have 80 of the world's top 100 cities at or near coastlines. And during the Pliocene epoch, we had sea levels that were 80 to 100 feet higher. That would alter the geography of the planet. So again, we're painted into quite a corner. And if we have to decide if we're going to try to hide it, as the climate engineers are attempting to hide it in certain aspects, because they create headlines, just like they just created the 7 feet of snow on the east side of the Great Lakes, and then several days after, in fact 3 days ago, it was 60 degrees and raining there, all-time record highs in Philadelphia after the all-time record lows. So this pendulum effect is tearing the biosphere apart. They can engineer a cool down in a region, very large regions at times, but it's a very shallow layer of cold. The temperatures rebound right back up, so the cost for that cool down is a worsened overall warming. How long can that continue? I would argue not much longer.
Yeah, we're talking about complete failure to recognize that the Earth kind of has this, you know? There's no need to mess with it. There's just needs to, you know, just stop trying to mess with it. And the planet will be here long after we are gone, you know? The planet's fine. We're screwed. That's what's going on here. It'll repair itself and that kind of thing. What was it George Carlin said? The planet's doing just fine. We've been around for about 200,000 years. It's been around for about 4.5 billion years, you know. It's been right through climate changes before, magnetic pole shifts and earthquakes and tsunamis and volcanoes and solar flares and asteroids and comet impacts and all sorts of other things. And we think some carbon dioxide is just going to mess everything up for it. You know, it's
well, again,
us that we need to be worried about. And the thing is, it's kind of like about habitat, right? There are certain people who are interested in environmentalism, not because they actually care about the planet in the abstract. It's because they want their own little clean habitat to live in. They don't really care unless they've got a place to park their Volvo. That kind of vain, selfish self-interest is not impressive. And it's not productive. Now, when we're talking about climate engineering and Trans-Pacific Partnership, I think that these things are connected. I think that the same group of sociopathic scumbags with more money than God are actually at play here behind all these issues simultaneously. And what people do, and they mistakenly do the New World Order tactic thing, they either will infight amongst themselves, or they will try to convince other people who are doing their own thing very well that what you're doing isn't quite as important as what I'm doing, and you should stop what you're doing and join me, and all of that kind of thing. I think it actually works more like a cactus. Each and every one of us is some form of prick on a cactus. And what we're there to do is to protect the human species and, you know, the planet ostensibly from attack from all conceivable directions. Nobody can do everything, but everybody can do something.
They absolutely, absolutely can, Vincent. And Sylvain, I have a question on your perspective. I would appreciate what we see. Along the lines of what Vincent just described about those who aren't really looking for the common good overall, but simply trying to protect their own little niche. We see that here in the U.S. because of the 501c3 nonprofits, which belong to churches and environmental groups. We see both categories patently ignoring, refusing to look at or acknowledge the climate engineering issue, which makes their positions the epitome of hypocrisy, whether we're talking about spiritual institutions or environmental protection institutions like Sierra Club, Greenpeace, so on. They are virtually doing nothing while the house is burning down in regard to climate engineering. They're focused on issues that do not matter in comparison. Same with the spiritual institutions. They refuse to look at this issue, and the bottom line reason for that appears to be because of their 501c3s. They don't want to jeopardize their nonprofit status. So they continue to protect that while the ship goes to the bottom, as if that will matter soon on the current course. So I'm curious, in Canada, I know we don't have a lot of groups speaking out there, ETC, which I think is centered in Canada, did far more harm than good for the climate engineering issue when they went to the biodiversity conference in 2010 and placed a moratorium on geoengineering, which made a lot of people think, oh, good, it's over. It did far more harm than good by deceiving people into thinking that they had done something when all they had done in reality was help to hide the elephant in the room.
It's funny you mentioned the ETC. They're located on Metcalf Street in Ottawa. They're just about 100 yards from where I work. And when I had my my event at the University of Ottawa, their main auditorium where I showed What in the World Are They Spraying, I invited them to come as speakers, as guest speakers. And I went a step beyond because I knew they wouldn't come. I plastered the whole, every single telephone pole I could find right in front of their building with big, big posters inviting people to come. It was, a lot of people attended the event, and it was successful. And we stayed 7 hours there. You know, we had to leave at 1:30 in the morning because the guards said, hey, we got to go to bed too. And so they kicked us out. It was fabulous. ETC does not respond to my phone calls, my emails, does not come to the events I organize about chemtrails here. So I have nothing good to say about them. They're doing their own thing. And with respect to companies and organizations in general, people do what they are told from the top of the pyramid within the company. And they're paid to do certain things, and they have to follow policies. It's just like with a newspaper company or a TV. You talk to a journalist. He's very interested in your story. He goes to see the editor-in-chief and said, no, don't contact somebody. He's blacklisted because he's possibly an anarchist or whatever, you know, whatever they say. And I even had editors-in-chief of the main television media phone me and say never to contact one of my journalists. I said, they contacted me. They wanted to cover me. He says, don't say anything to them. I said, I will say whatever I want to them, and it's up to them to discuss it with you. You know? So there's control in companies and organizations. Even Greenpeace is controlled. That, while everybody knows it's been infiltrated right now. So, you know, how do you affect people? My hope is with the youth. They're not as corrupted as the congressman. The congressman, it's funny, you ask him a question about a bill or about a law they just voted in, they can't ask you your answer. And yet they're all millionaires. How did they get that money? It's very odd that they were put there by people with money, and the people with money expect them to approve all the bills that they're pushing because it's up to them to... Well, anyways, see the movie Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, where he becomes a senator. So my hope right now is with the youth, because they're not as corrupted. They believe in democracy. They believe in freedom. A teenager came up to me the other day and said, look, our soldiers are dying for freedom. They're losing limbs for freedom. And our politicians give our freedoms away, and they monitor us, and we have less and less freedom that these soldiers die for. So it's an upside-down world. But what I would say right now, focus on the solutions. Repeat the solutions. And focus on common denominator issues. I don't want to scare people with anything except the TPP right now, because once that's signed in, that's it. The world as we know it is gone.
Now, can I say something about the youth? Because I'm only 29 years old. I consider myself, you know, still part of the youth, you know. And okay. I look at my demographics, okay, on my YouTube. I'm going to read them out for you. 65 years plus is 7.7%. 55 to 64 years is 17%. This is percentage of the audience that are clicking on my videos every month. 45 to 54 years is 19%. 35 to 44 years is 23%. 25 to 34 years is 24%. 18 to 24 years is only 8.5%. 13 to 17 is 1.5%. So it's actually the elder generations who have lived through decades. This is what it tells me. The elder generations that have lived through decades of this crap are the ones who are actually realizing that it's happening at all. And I only know about it as one of the youth, because all of my friends are usually about twice my age. Because I couldn't get along with my fellow generation. And I go out there and party sometimes, and, you know, on the very odd occasion. And it just seems like they have no older role models whatsoever. And I think this is part of the agenda, because the elders have experience and wisdom and knowledge to share. The youth have energy and innovation and motivation to share. And I think that there's been a deliberate agenda at some point to cut us off from each other so that we can't actually share for those areas which we currently lack and desperately need.
Maybe that's your job, Vinny.
Be a bridge between worlds.
Yeah.
You stepped in on that one. To back up more what Solvang said, and, you know, these organizations like Greenpeace, which I was on Go Green Radio with their top scientist about a year ago, and there's no question he knew about climate engineering. Anybody who listened to that show would conclude that he knew about this but would not speak about it. Amy Goodman, for anybody who knows who Amy is, and she's receiving funding from the Ford Foundation. I know people who work with her. She will not touch geoengineering or 9/11 in any way that matters. And her attitude is, well, it's better to get at least some of the news out. And I would argue that. If her followers think that if it was happening, she would tell them, and she's not telling them, then she is deceiving them, the same as corporate media is. Free Speech TV mailed a lot of commercial copies of climate engineering films. Look up What in the World films went to them also. They have said they would air things, and they just disappear back into the woodwork. And on the solutions, this is where it becomes hard, Sylvain, because I don't argue your point in theory, but at the same time, I did climate change lectures before the state of the climate, before I had to focus all on climate engineering, because I feel that you can't have a legitimate discussion about the climate without discussing climate engineering first. You can't, which makes the whole scientific community illegitimate by ignoring this largest single piece to the puzzle. But there were too many people at those lectures and the presentations I do now who want you to tell them, do A, B, and C, and everything will go right back to what it was. And I can't say that, because it's simply a lie at this point. And I would rather have, and I've learned this over the years, I would rather have a small number of people that are committed to the common good because it's the right thing to do. And there is no other choice. It's the right thing to do. There's nothing else to think about or consider than a room full of people who will only be motivated if they can be guaranteed a specific result. And that's the kind of civilization we have right now. They won't even act unless they're guaranteed a happy ending with very little effort. And that's not going to happen.
How about this? I guarantee you years of suffering, pain, abuse, being set up, ignored, screwed over, having your money messed with, and maybe some jail time and torture and no promise of success. Is that, see,
but
there you go.
There's
your motivational. There's your motivational speech, kiddies out there. This is the grand future that you have to look forward to if you become an activist like us.
you know what comes with that, though, Vincent. I you know, you are very fast on your feet, and I salute your wit. But what comes with that is the right to look yourself in the mirror and not turn away, and that people who have engaged in this for the right reasons have retained the only thing that they ever owned, their honor. That's all any of us own. Everything else can be taken, and likely will be soon. But they cannot take our honor. And if you stand on that one principle, which is each of our own to protect, That's the bottom line for life, as far as I'm concerned. Life has to be about something. And that might not go down easy in our current culture that centers around personal pursuits of pleasure. But that principle can be stood on and cannot be taken from you.
And not to mention, when you do become an activist, those tend to be the only people who can bother hanging out with you anymore, because they're not dishonorable. They actually tend to be a lot more fun, a lot more switched on, a lot more honest, and a lot more active and inspiring people.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The alternative is, if you want to go through life doing the 9-to-5 slave job and that kind of thing, it's not something that's going to be remembered. Oh, this guy, he did his work, yep, and then he died. And there's a couple of kids over here. You know, see, that's about the burial you're going to get. It ain't going to be like people across the world mourning your passing because you helped so many of them. That's the thing about being a human being, is you can actually help others. There's an energy transfer that goes on. You're either both creating energy and you're sending it into the conversation, or one of you sucking it away off the other person, okay? If you're doing nothing with your life, I can guarantee you, you're one of those people that sucks energy and doesn't bring anything new to the table. If you're sick of that, if you're sick of boring conversations about television and something fictional that you have a shared experience on through a digital medium, if that's the only conversation you have, if you ain't talking about the deeper, meaningful issues or things that are actually of consequence to the survival of the human effing race, then maybe you better take a look at yourself, son. You want to think about, how many of these great men throughout history, or great women for that matter, started off as great people and then just kind of worked on it a little bit more and then got really, really good? No, there don't seem to be any of those. It's because you really have to apply your life to a great pursuit if you want to achieve great ends. Dedicating your life to nothingness, to vain entertainment simply to pass the time because you're bored and can't carry a conversation without a smartphone in your hand, isn't something that will be remembered, isn't something that will change humanity for the better. It isn't something that will change anything at all. If you want to change anything at all, there are consequences to wanting to do it, sure, but the consequences of not doing it are far more dire.
Indeed they are, Vincent. I agree with everything you've stated, and I would argue we live in a culture that is paralyzed by its own mortality. And I would argue also a large reason for that is because deep down, somewhere inside, when our culture knows that their life is focused around their own personal pursuit of pleasure, the common good is not a part of it, what will you be found doing when your day comes? What would you want to be found doing? Something completely centered around your own personal pursuit of pleasure, or something for the common good? And when you are engaged for the common good, you no longer fear your own mortality in the way that so many do. That black cloud goes away because you know you're engaged in what you should be engaged with. And when we live in a society of such utter and total deception, I'm looking at an article out today talking about climate engineering. In the whole science community, we're talking about thousands of academicians who will not admit this is going on and deceptively pretend that these are only proposals. Looking at one of those articles right now that states, if we ever have to deploy these technologies, then we have failed to be stewards of the planet. It's been going on for 65 years. How much more in the dark could they be? How about 9/11? Buildings falling down in front of the whole world and people don't get it? People are living in an absolute delusion, total delusion, that's about to be shattered. So again, all the things you described, yes, that comes with the territory, with fully committing to the fight for the common good. But being able to sleep at night also comes with it.
You have people that stand up for you when you fall, you know. The alternative is basically being alone in all of this. Frack that.
And those people that, as Mark Twain said, if you can j- judge a man by those who call him friend. And I'm honored for the friendship of certain people who I also count my friends, but I'm honored that they count me theirs. If you do, or Sylvain does, or others who are engaged for the common good, and I'm honored to be in your company, both of you.
See, now that's much better. It's like the Knights of the Round Table type theme. I really get into that mode sometimes when I talk about honor and such. And it's actually really, really cool. It's almost like being part of a fantasy that you make real. It's like whatever you've been told about what a hero looks like or what a hero does in terms of being super strong or super fast or anything like that, it's a lie. Real heroes simply stand on principles and don't let go, and that's all that's really required of you.
Well, we are soon going to find out what those around us are made of, very soon. And that will cut the fog from the air. It's happening now. It's already happening. We see it everywhere. People around us, I'm sure, Vincent and Sylvain, I'm sure you have people in your circles that have cut themselves loose because they don't want to be exposed to the sort of tenacity with which you both cling to the fight for the common good. And my circle is completely dissolved, my former circle from 15 years ago. But I wouldn't have it any other way.
Well, there's sometimes, you know, you need to sort the wheat from the chaff. Sorry, Sylvain, was it?
I just wanted to say, just a minute, I lost my thought there. It's a benefit of my age.
That was stirring.
Sylvain, you're a spring chicken still, yes?
it'll come back to me in a second.
It comes up, you know, we're all experiencing that sort of thing these days. I hear it from all over, and I miss the days when I was in New Zealand, Vincent. I remember driving through Auckland and seeing the sights and spearfishing at the Bay of Islands and how lush the marine life was there, and it's just astounding that the human race could decimate a planet in such a short amount of time. But if we can sow enough seeds, and this is what I would argue again, that it can seem fruitless for a time while you're sowing seeds and they're just not sprouting, but they're there, and as people are forced to wake up, those seeds will find fertile ground, and there's a lot more seeds sown than people realize. There's a lot more awareness somewhere deep, dark back in people's minds about the climate engineering issue, even 9/11, other things. When they are forced to face that reality, at least they will then have a clue how we got here. And when they are forced to wake up and there is no other choice, as you stated earlier in the show, Vincent, when there's no other choice, no other alternative, and they have to wake up, we will see if we may yet change the flavor of what we face. And we may yet indeed, all of us working together, we may change the flavor of what we face in the positive direction, no matter what the overall outcome. If we can take a quantum leap in the right direction, why wouldn't we? No matter what effort it takes, some chance is better than no chance.
Now, there's been a number of experiments that have been done using, quantum mechanics, quantum physics, that kind of thing, like the slit experiment, that what you do changes upon the observer. Have you guys seen this experiment? It's quite interesting. But what the point of this is, all of your actions, even you observing something, actually changes the thing that you're acting on in some small way. Now, what this tells me is that we're capable of having ripple effects just on small actions and have completely unforeseen consequences based upon even the intention of those actions. You know what I'm saying? And I'd like to kind of cite an example here. They did this study, I think it might have been published in a major newspaper, about smiling. And if you give somebody a wee grin, you know, a wee cheeky, and they walk away from you, the chances are they'll smile too. But they won't smile necessarily just back at you. They'll actually smile to seven other people. Mm. So one grin can actually equal 7 plus a ripple effect on top of the people that they're smiling to will also likely share that smile around. So just one person taking the deliberate action to smile nicely at somebody else, in a way, in a very quantum little manner, can actually change the world a little bit. And so if we've got the purest of intentions and the proudest of hearts, I think that we can have an effect here, even if we're no longer around to see it reach its fruition.
There's a man that reminds me of a man. He's quite unknown. I even forget his name. It'll come back to me in a second. But he influenced two very well-known people, Joseph Lister from Listerine and Louis Pasteur. And this man had a very simple idea that saved the lives of millions of people in future generations, even till this day. Because what he thought of, a solution that was so simple, he was being mocked by the medical community of every single country in the world. He made a recommendation that doctors, after they performed autopsies on corpses, that they should wash their hands before operating on one person to another person to another person. Because back in the 1700s, it was not practice. You know, you operated on somebody, then they pushed another patient, and he would continue operating. No gloves, no washing of the hands, nothing. Because they didn't see the value of being antiseptic. But then, two scientists later on, Louis Pasteur and Joseph Lister, said, this guy is right. And they created a medical procedure throughout the hospitals of the world to force doctors to wear gloves and to wash their hands before and after surgery. So this one man had a simple solution. And it just reminded me of what I was thinking about before. My audience, the people I talk to every day about these things, has matured. They are convinced, so I don't have to convince them. And they ask me, what do we do about it? Is there something simple we can do that it can have an effect worldwide if more people did it? And so if we do not tell these people what are the simple things we can do to stop this evil, well, these many evils, then this is just an intellectual exercise, and we don't really care about making change at all.
I think it's an individual way, because sometimes I fear that if you give people solutions to problems all the time, then they never actually adapt the skill to problem solve on their own, so they'll always need somebody holding their hand. I mean, sometimes the greatest gift you can give people is complete faithlessness in the abilities of others to save them from something that they fear and that you have to save yourself.
I think you have to put a few seeds in there. Like, for instance, if the problem is the Federal Reserve and how to eliminate it, you know, that's a complex situation. So you could give them some suggestions to get started. So get them going, you know, start turning the wheels. They can find the solutions on their own. Yeah, the people, it's, you know, those people who bother to ask you for a solution, I think they deserve an answer, because if we don't have any, they won't. Or if they do, they'll have to be more motivated than we are.
But of course that's no guarantee.
Go ahead,
Dan.
Some solutions come, I would argue, by simply reaching a level of awareness that causes the dominoes to fall, and I would argue climate engineering is one such scenario where that occurs, because it is the single greatest assault against all life on Earth, bar none, short of nuclear cataclysm. We are all under assault right here, right now, with every breath we take. If we could simply bring that to light and do it, as far as answers, Sylvain, when people discover that they can make their voice heard effectively, credibly, and we try. I've distributed 170,000 color glossy flyers as tools for people to go in the field and pass on something credible so that they can plant a seed that may indeed sprout, not go into a rant that they perhaps can't back up because they haven't researched this issue long enough, but actual tools they can put in their hand so they can go engage in the fight, get up off the bench, and become part of the solution And in reaching that 100th monkey of awareness, I would argue in this case, the paradigm we are in will collapse. And it is collapsing on its own right now. It cannot continue. It will not continue. Industrialized society is doomed, and it is dissolving. But if we can accomplish something that would help people to understand how we got here and why we ended up in this place, that the epitome of human insanity, the absolute epitome, is climate engineering. And back to what Vincent said, when you're conscious and things can be affected by that, the double slit experiment with light photons, I feel, is one such experiment. For those who don't know what that is, light photons appear to behave in different manners whether you observe, when you observe the experiment, as opposed to when you do not. How is that possible? How can a light photon behave differently in one circumstance or another, depending only on whether you observe that experiment? What don't we know? There is so much we don't know. In a very science rational sense, there's so much we don't know. If we can reach a critical mass of human awareness on this greatest assault against all life on Earth, what may come from that? We can't know until we get there. But if there's one issue that can catalyze everyone that you can't escape from, that didn't come and go, didn't pass, it's not about electing somebody, it's about fighting for your very life, for every single breath you take. And that issue is climate engineering. And I'm not saying the other issues aren't important and that the fight that many people are in are not important, but I am arguing that if we can't take that breath every day without pulling these toxins in that destroy our neurological system, our cognitive ability, then we are very near the end of the road. We must plug that leak in the ship, or we're back to game over.
It's far more important than the results of the football match. Incidentally, if the football players are playing all the time and breathing a lot of that stuff in, they won't be your football players for long, and there goes your entertainment. So you may as well become a geoengineering activist, because you're going to lose
there
it
you
all
go.
Anyway, bro.
There you go. Yes, and many are. Many are. We're hearing from a lot of people that are now realizing this is not going to go away. Not going to go away. And if we could reach, again, as far as it coming down, if the families of those who are carrying out these programs, their wives, their children, if they realize what their family members are involved with, I would argue the game changes right then in that family, in that household. And I know some that are in civil war right now because they have a leader to their family who is doing this for a paycheck, and now the family's not okay with it. And we can crack that foundation from the inside out by simply bringing this issue to light. There will be a shockwave around the globe if we can do that. And we're getting closer by the day.
Yeah. I mean, there's an old Roman saying, if you want to control the men, threaten the women. If you want to control the women, threaten the children. I'm going to change that. If you want to control the men, tell them that their women are in danger from geoengineering. If you want to get the women involved in the fight against it, tell them that their children are in danger of it. You know? You can use tyrannical things and then turn them on their head and use them for good. Just the same as good things can be turned on their head by tyrannical sociopathic scumbaggery and used for bad. You know? Nothing in officialdom, in my opinion, doesn't have an ironic title. For example, spiritual institution. You'd figure if someone was spiritual, they wouldn't be institutionalized.
A point well taken. A point well taken. Let's hope that those groups, and I've been into many, many, meeting with the head pastors of congregations who look at me and say, I don't want your data. It's all in big hands. It's not for us to worry about that. And their belief system, and I don't care which spiritual belief system we're talking about, does not allow them to sit and do nothing. None of them that I know of, and I've studied most of the major religions. So again, we have in every segment hypocrisy. Yes.
Clearly you haven't studied the effects of nihilism.
Continue.
I mean, that's a big religious movement out there. If there's one movement that will definitely do nothing.
Yes, I would agree.
In my travels, when I used to work in the research down in the United States, I lived there for a couple of years. And I'll never forget the license plate of different states. Like, for instance, New Hampshire, it's live free or die. And the ones who print the license plates are prisoners. They're not free. I mean, Americans have such a sense of humor. But one plate that I really liked was Missouri, the Show Me State. And I didn't know what it meant until I started talking with the people and the scientists there. And so I was talking some scientific research. I was working on some fiberglass reinforced plastics additives to make certain properties. And I was looking at metals, I was looking at ceramics, I was looking at glass fibers and so on. And then one of the chief scientists said, Sylvain, he said, I like what you developed here. I said, how'd you do it? And he said, show me. He didn't say, explain it to me. They don't say, explain it to me over there. They say, show it to me. And so I went into my bag and I got my samples and I showed him the samples. And he took it out of the bottle and he felt it and he sniffed it and tasted it. And he said, why does this work again? And but they actually have to touch it, to see it, to feel it. I like the people in Missouri for that reason, because like in the chemtrail, the struggle for truth, we could actually go to an aluminum foundry where they make different aluminum products like aluminum foil paper, et cetera, aluminum ducting, and ask them for a sample of or a jar of microfine aluminum alumina particles, I should say, and of the very smallest size, and bring that home, and it'll make you think and understand certain things. And then take it a little bit of it, and then sprinkle it in a glass of water, and see it disappear, and see that there are different grades and different colors of alumina. Some are clear, some are blue, some are brownish, some are beige. See if it has a taste. See if it has a smell. So it's, when I do research, I like to, I'm reminded of my friends in Missouri, the Show Me State.
You know, I always wanted to know what strontium tastes like. You know, does it go good with cheese? Is it something you sprinkle on the barbecue while you're grilling? While you're grilling your chicken wings, I mean,
I deep down, I think you're a closet chef.
Yeah, I once saw a good plaque on a friend of mine's grandma's place that says, "Never trust a skinny chef."
Hey,
one of those immutable truths, like never give a woman your credit card. Speaking of women, I found that my wife is really, really good at changing my habits. By nagging me about them. And I actually see it as a really positive, reinforcing point in my life. It's something that's reliable, it's there. If I'm doing something that's dangerous or stupid or bad for my health or something like that, she'll give me grief about it. And I thought to myself, hey, that's exactly how it works in the geoengineering families, doesn't it? If the dad's going off and he's flying a chemtrail plane or whatever, and he comes home to his wife, she'll give him crap about it. You know? Oh, I hate the smell of aluminium when you come back off the plane, darling. It's terrible. It's terrible. You know, it'd be great. It'd be great if there was actually like a domestic incident on the news or something, like people yelling at each other, and they were yelling at each other about chemtrail geoengineering. Just
it's hard for me to imagine seeing New Zealand as I have twice, two trips. It's hard for me to imagine a place that beautiful and pristine could be feeling such effects from this. But Northern California was the same only 10 years ago, and now it's like a completely different forest here. It's decimated. And it's happened in 10 years, so I imagine the same could be certainly happening there. It's happening all over the globe, Vincent. Nowhere to hide. That's what this comes down to. Nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. When you're standing at the end of the plank and stepping backward goes off the end, you turn and you face your fears, period. We need everybody
It's called taking a stand.
Yes.
We all have to do one at least once in our life, you know. Maybe saving the human race should be one of those. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm just taking a stab in the dark here.
That was the time.
A man without principles is a body without bones. You know, if you're not willing to stand for anything, to die for anything, then you're not fit to live. You know.
Agreed.
Do you think people are ungrateful to life in general? They're just perfectly fine with seeing it go away? I hope not. I hope that I'm not the only one, and in fact I know I'm not the only one, who actually values my life and values the lives of the people around me and doesn't want to see it all washed away in a geoengineered sky. Frank, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening up to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guests have been Dane Wigington and Sylvain Henry from Canada. You can check them out on Facebook, and also our geoengineeringwatch.org is Dane's website. And please go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and donate today and support the broadcast. Thank you very much for listening. We'll see you again sometime.
Revolution Radio.